Welcome, 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 Real Stories Podcast listeners, to a special edition of Real Stories Podcast with only Graham and no Brian today. As you may know, Brian travels for his job and loves his job, but he's out of town from time to time. And just this last spring, he happened to be out of town. I got sort of a last minute opportunity to sit down and speak with my congressman, Bob Latta, who represents the 5th District in Ohio in Congress since 2007. He's been our congressman. And so I thought, great opportunity. He came in to speak to my government class, and I told him about the podcast. He said he was interested, and you know, he's like, let's do it. And so we did it pretty much on a whim. And Brian wasn't able to be there. I grabbed my friend and colleague, Aaron Frazee. We sat down in the high school library at Upper Sandusky High School and talked to Bob Latta for a little while. It was great. It was cool. And I'm super glad I did it. I want to make sure everyone knows, like, this isn't a political endorsement or any sort of, hey, Real Stories Podcast, we vote for Bob Latta. We don't care about that. That's not why I talked to him. I talked to him because I wanted to get to know him. I thought it was an opportunity to just sort of see what he was all about. Tried to talk to him about his childhood, talk to him about growing up the son of a congressman. His dad, Del Latta, was a U.S. congressman. So talked about going hunting when he was a kid, school, how Bowling Green and how the district has changed. Talked about his experience in college and then how he made his way up through the ranks and ended up running for U.S. Congress of the 5th District in Ohio. It was great. It was a cool conversation. I hope that all of you appreciate just getting to know him a little bit. I don't know where you're at when you're listening, but this is just a dude from Northwest Ohio, pretty down-to-earth guy that I thought seemed to answer the questions pretty sincerely. He's a talker. He's a congressman. He's used to talking. He's used to giving interviews. So he did a really nice job of answering the questions, but also of, you know, he's talking, he's filling time, and it was good and interesting. And I hope that everybody agrees, whether you are politically aligned or not. So anyway, that's it for the introduction. I just wanted to make sure I clarified a few things there. And I think that you guys will enjoy this. Again, thanks to Aaron Frazee for this. And thanks to Congressman Bob Latta for agreeing to not only come in and talk to my government class on this day, but to allow me to ask him some questions and to record them and share them with all you great folks out there who are listening to Real Stories Podcast. So I'll get to the show. I hope you all enjoy this special one-off edition of Real Stories Podcast. Bob, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, of course. I know everybody will appreciate hearing from their congressman, so I know I do.
Well, again, thank you.
Yeah, so without getting too much into like current political stuff, I sort of just want to talk about how you ended up here. You grew up in Northwest Ohio, born in Bluffton.
Right.
And then when did you move to, did you go to high school in Bowling Green?
Yeah, the best way to say it, my parents were living in Macomb. When my sister was born, and the doctor was in Bluffton. So then they moved to Bowling Green before I was born, but the doctor was still in Bluffton. So I can always say I was a 3-day resident of Bluffton. And so Bowling Green has always been home base.
Okay. So you really grew up in Bowling Green. Okay. How has Bowling Green changed over the years? I know you went to college there, but even just high school and, you know.
Well, you know, like a lot of our communities, they've all grown. And so, you know, when I, our backyard, when I was a kid, my parents built a house in 57. And, you know, I think our backyard was the edge of Bowling Green. It was all farm field behind us. It was great when I was a kid. You know, you could go out and play in the field and everything else. Now there's hundreds of houses back there.
Yep.
So, you know, we've just seen a growth, not only at the university, but also in the city of Bowling Green.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everything's. Well, I feel like it's places are growing and other places are dying.
Yeah,
and
some are growing, some are shrinking.
Yeah, it's like you said earlier, there's just population shifts happening with slight growth everywhere.
But you know, one of the interesting thing about this is that, you know, I remember as a kid going up Main Street, we had the Sears catalog store, we had the Penny's catalog store, we had the Montgomery Ward catalog. I always thought it was so neat to go into these places because your mom and dad would go in there and they'd fill out the blanks in the form 2 days later. Like a miracle, a package came. But I remember back when I was in the Ohio legislature, we were talking about pretty much where the economy was moving, especially when we were talking about the internet. Mm-hmm. And even at that time, you know, it was in its, I wouldn't say it's in its infancy, but it was, you know, smaller and people weren't using it. But today, think about this, is that we're doing a complete cycle of where we were, or like a 180, that we're saying that, you know what, we are now looking at having not the bricks and mortar like we used to have.
For sure.
But we're going back to what? And I predicted a long time ago, you might be in a situation down the road, even with warehousing, that it'll be that if you buy a shirt online or something like that, that won't be, they'll be made for you and shipped to you.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I'm fortunate because having 86,000 manufacturing jobs in my district and being able to go through so many different facilities. But I know when I've gone through some of the larger companies that are wholesale or not wholesale, but retailers, I should say, excuse me, that years back I'd say, now how large is your web area? And they just show this very small little area. And today you go into them, it's massive.
Oh yeah.
Because people are doing what? They're buying online. And so, you know, we're seeing a shift. But so, you know, I think that I've been through smaller businesses, you know, in very small towns that have adapted. You can buy a shirt or a pair of pants from them online, yeah, and they're shipping to Alaska.
I think it's brought back the old, like, skilled tradesman stuff, too. Well, we can make it a go.
And see, this is why I serve on the Energy and Commerce Committee. And, you know, energy, healthcare, telecommunications, the oversight, commerce, and environment. But my subcommittee I chair is communications and technology. And as I mentioned to the class today, that, you know, when I said broadband and, you know, internet service out there, and I said, you know, one of the things, if we don't have it, it's just not for students to be able to, you know, do their work from home, or for people that might have a home business, or, you know, in the very near future, because I've seen it, because so much of our committee things blend together from the health to the telecommunications. Right. If you think about telehealth, that, you know, you might have, you know, a lot of people have their cell phone in the near future. You'll put your fingers on it, it'll be doing all these diagnostics on you. But this is why it's so important that we get this the broadband across the entire nation. Because if you're located in a small town with a small business, and you're like what you just mentioned, how are you going to find them?
Right.
If they don't have broadband service, they're lost. So they have to do. They can think of multiple things. Number one, they move, or number two, they close up, and then there's one more little store or one more little factory out of a town.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Okay, second question. What was it like growing up? You mentioned this to the kids. I think it's interesting. I mean, you grew up with a dad that was a congressman. Dell. Dell.
Dell.
Yeah. And had a long career as a congressman. And I mean, he was on the Watergate Judiciary Committee. I imagine as a child, you had a pretty good insight into the world of politics, more so than everybody else. I mean, what did you get that sense as a child that you were kind of a little bit different, like at least having a cool experience?
I wouldn't say different because, you know, my dad grew up in the Depression. He was one of six kids. It was, when I say it was tough, it was tough. And yeah, my mom grew up on a farm with one of seven back in the, you know, and mom's family didn't get electricity until 35.
Yep.
So she had 12 years with no electricity. Oh, and the house wasn't modernized until after World War II. So, you know, our roots have always been here in north central Ohio. Yep. In this region. And one of the things I really learned from my dad was to respect the office. And I can remember saying something during a presidential race in 1964. I was just like a little kid. My dad said, "Now listen, I want to tell you something. You never say something about that person, but you always respect that office." Yep. Period.
Yeah.
And so it's so important that, you know, something I learned at an early time was the respect of the office. We had to listen to other people's opinions. Mm-hmm. And that was important. And so for my dad, one of the questions that one of the students asked today, you know, talking about, and there's no way I could ever compare what my dad went through, because, you know, he hitchhiked back and forth from Macomb to Findlay, from Macomb. And then he said on some nights, if he couldn't get a ride, he walked the rest of the way back from wherever he couldn't get a ride. And, you know, he worked his way all the way for everything he ever had. And that's something, you know, that I learned from dad.
Yeah.
But the big thing I think it really was is that when it, just growing up around it, it was really, again, as I mentioned to the students, you really learn that you've got to participate in this. And, you know, and the other thing is, I don't care if it's in Congress or what level, because, you know, I was first elected as a county commissioner. But, you know, we have great people that run for office across not only our state, but across the country. But unfortunately, it's that 0.2%, 0.1% that really make people look bad.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so that's like, always
so,
true.
So, but I know when people have a bad opinion of it, it's because they're not, and I tell people this, I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican, but I work with a lot of Democrats, and I might not agree with them, but you know what? I know something about them. They work hard. The folks I know in D.C.,
what we sometimes run into as teachers, you know, you have those horrible days, and you have to remind yourself, you know what, 99% of these kids that I have are working hard, doing what they're supposed to do, you know, and you just have to let that kind of carry you through too.
Yeah. And I think it's true with, like, in Congress, you know, no matter what side you're on, I always think it's important to remember that everyone there thinks they're doing what's right for their people. Like, no, there's very few that are like, like there with, you know, the evil smoky room.
That, like, twisting up their
mustache. Yeah, they're there, whether they're on the left or the right, or they're down, they're more centric. They think they're doing what's right. They've learned it. They've talked to their constituents. They've clearly gotten elected, and they're there to do something good, I think, for the most part. And then hopefully, you know, there's some compromise and everybody realizes that, oh, okay, you want what's best. This Democrat over here wants what's best. Is there anywhere where they can possibly work together? Did your dad teach you to hunt? Did you hunt with your dad?
My dad started me out when I was, I've got some pictures when I was a really little kid, but up to his knee that I'd be out. It was back in the days we had pheasants and rabbits.
Yep.
And so, and one of the things about my dad, I the same situation, things I love to do, you don't have much time to do it. But my dad never said, you're not coming along.
Yep.
He always took me. If I wanted to go, which was always, I was out there. And so, you know, my dad was there when I got my first rabbit when I was 9. And, you know, when I got my first pheasant when I was, I can't remember, a few years after that.
Yep.
And, but you know, it's just, I love to do it because now I'm a big bow hunter. And when you just set
okay,
up
I wonder, tree, I was going to ask you if you bow hunted or if you,
and, I was just talking with, another member from Virginia, who's a big birder. And, I've always told him he needs to come up to, Lake Erie with the biggest bird, migration in North America, once a year. But we were talking, and I said, you know, one of the things about hunting is this, even if you're out and you don't get anything, I've had some of the most amazing things happen, like having a red-tailed hawk not realize I was in the tree and land, about 3 foot from me and sat there for about 15 minutes. And I could watch that bird move its head, do everything, and it's just like absolutely unbelievable.
Yep.
And another time I was out and a great horned owl almost landed on my shoulder. That's why I thought it might be a little bit dusky to be out. if he can't identify me, I better move. But it also has given me a great sense for nature. Even looking out our back window at home, over the weekend we had 22 deer in our backyard. Yep. We have a couple of does that figured out how to tilt our bird feeder, and there goes our bird feed. But we're watching a squirrel climb up there and figure out how in the world it can pull that thing over. And I said, if it's that, it got that much wanting to get that thing moved, I'm not going to scare it. Just it's on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think once I've hunted with my dad, we don't get out as much anymore, but he always told me it's not about we might get something today, but that's not sitting out in the woods and listening to the sounds of the woods and just like being a part of nature was what it was. And then we oftentimes, my dad, he would always, my mom would get home. Did you guys see anything? Oh yeah. A couple, pretty decent buck came by. And I'm like, did you shoot at it? No, I mean, it's October. I don't want to kill one. I don't want one now. I want to get one in February when it's towards the end. And because my dad my dad to this day just mushroom hunts, deer hunts. We never got into bird hunting. We turkey hunted a little when we were little, but, and I pheasant hunt with some of my friends now. And I love it. Birding.
And the last experience I had hunting with my dad was about 5 miles from here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We were out deer hunting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's cool. So I know you've done some hunting in Wyandotte County. Have you ever got a deer around here?
I'm going to say a few.
Okay. Nice. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you've been hunting here for over 20 years, right?
Yeah. And, some years are better than others. I took an 8-point and a doe, here this year.
Okay.
In some years you might get, one, but, the one I need to still pick up at the butcher shop.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yep.
My daughter was part of the group, the eighth graders that were in DC in the fall that you spoke to. And that was one of the things when she came back, my wife was on the trip too. They both said, hey, he said he was in a hurry to get back to get to his tree stand. I said, well, that's cool. He's doing that. So,
yeah, I think it's good. It's just a good, good part of life is getting out in the outdoors.
Well, I've also been fortunate when I was in the Ohio legislature. I represented up by the lake. And if you ever look at the numbers, our eagle population is really along Lake Erie. And I was out with a banding, this is probably back in 97, 98, and I was with the Division of Wildlife, and I said, do you all have enough money for what you need to do? And they said, no. So by the end of the afternoon, we came up with the idea I'd sponsor a bald eagle license plate. And back in those days, it was almost like giving up one of your firstborn to be able to get that plate. but we got it. And I checked the other day, we've raised $3.3 million for eco habitat and restoration.
That's cool.
And being out with the banding, the guys, because now, we went from having four nests in 1979. To having over 900 today. And so it just shows the dedication of our Division of Wildlife people, our biologists, and then also the people that were willing to go out there and watch these nests on their own to make sure nothing happened. So, but nature to me is one of those things you always never want to take for granted.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and you've done, I think recently, some legislation on like public lands, right? What did I see? Had to do, the part I remember noticing was it had to do with that you could get permits to do some videoing and things like that.
Yeah, because we want to make sure that you have the ability to get out, and the cost isn't to the point that it prohibits smaller videographers to get out. And I know that years ago when our daughters were young, I was at our older daughter, when she was about 9, I think it was, got her hunter ed done. I remember asking, I said, do you all have enough help? And they said, no. And so I took the course. And so I've been a hunter ed, and I teach with my friends here in Dave Cortad down, and usually over at the Cary Club.
Yeah.
And I was also asked in Washington, I'm not sure how many hunter ed courses, but I taught a hunter ed course this past fall.
I heard you did.
People that want to get their so the group people in Columbus were very good, allow me to get that done for people in Washington then.
Okay, so you can use that Ohio one in...
Right. Once you have your hunter ed, it's good throughout the entire country.
Okay.
Right.
Very cool. I think there's some kids. I think there's a couple kids in this group that took a hunter ed class with you, with Dave Cortad and those guys.
It's a great time, and you work really hard to make sure those kids can pass that test.
Yeah, I imagine everybody that's in your you know, there's 435 of you guys around the country, and anything you can do to actually be a part of your communities, I think you have to do. And those are things, you know, you get a bunch of guys out at a lake and you're target shooting, or you're learning how to shoot guns, you're learning how to hunt. Everybody sort of like levels out, and it's like you're dressed. I imagine you've got your camo on and you've got a hunter orange vest on, and all of a sudden you're not a guy in a suit talking to
everybody,
these kids.
Everybody looks the same. We all, and that's the way we like it. We can get out. There's for a good number of years, a few of us were all hunted together down in D.C.
Did you ever hunt with Dick Cheney?
No. It also, in my time in Congress, I've been one of the co-chairs of the Sportsman's Caucus, which is, at that time, was the largest caucus. Well, it was still the largest. We had over 300 members, House and Senate.
Really?
And we have, I say we have about 40 that are out there that are truly, some of them just put their name on it, but we had about 40 that are really active.
Yeah.
And, but it's because my big push, especially my 2 years, was making sure that, again, we get kids outdoors. And I worry about kids today that they sit inside and they're playing video games. And I know that nothing against video games, but I know for our daughters, when they talk about it, my wife and I said, no. And so it's kind of like when I was a kid, in the summertime or on weekends, our moms all said the same thing, go outside.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so glad they did say that, because you learned a lot more. And it's, again, like I said, that, when you have a better appreciation for what's around you, as you mentioned, it makes you a better citizen. Because, you look around and go, you know what? We got to preserve this. One of the things we teach in Hunter Ed is this: there is a difference between the word conserve and preserve.
Yep.
So preservation and conservation. So conservation is the wise use of something, while preservation is the non-use.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that you've got a good use. And that's why, like legislation I've had in the past, like, look, folks, we want to make sure that you can go out there and enjoy this country and just not say that we got this area and, don't step on the grass.
Right.
Yeah.
It's tricky. The kids asked you this one too, but I was wondering, so you grew up here. How often are you here versus in DC? And are there unwritten rules of like, do you have to be here so often? I know you have to keep an address here, right? I mean, obviously.
Well, under the Constitution, for a member of Congress, for the House, you don't have to live in your district.
You don't?
No. It says you have to be a resident of the state.
Yep.
So, you don't have to be a resident to be able to be a member from the district. For me, though, usually a typical week is this. It's usually a 4-day into D.C. So, I fly out early on a Monday morning, get back late on a Thursday, or it could be a Tuesday, Friday.
Yep.
Or it could be if you're there Tuesday, Friday, you fly home, you're in the district Monday or Saturday, Sunday, and you get right back in and fly back on Monday morning. So, but, again, I always say this is what you get out of it, what you put into it. And so, for most people, they see it. And I tell you, I don't know how the people on the West Coast do it, if 8 hours from point A to point B, they're back and forth. And, they're back. And again, like I said, I know Republicans, I know Democrats, that as soon as we finish up our legislative work for the day, everybody heads for the airport to get back in the district.
Yeah.
So we normally have at least a work period during a month. So this week I'm across the district. And so we start scheduling. We have a lot of requests for when people want us to be out in the district. So we put those all together. And so off we go.
Well, we appreciate that. Yeah. No, you squeezed us in.
This is really the best part of the job, because this is where one thing I say about my district. For here in Wyandotte County or wherever I'm at, it's, when you have 86,000 manufacturing jobs, or I go into different businesses, I get to go to schools. I get to do things that other people never get to see and do. And one of the things I've always said is this: I am never than utterly amazed at what people come up with. I would, in a thousand years, they come up with an idea to do something in a factory. And I go, how did you come up with that? And they said, well, you know, we started in the garage at the, in our, and we, and now they're employing 300-400 people. They have this huge manufacturing complex, but only in America. Because in America, you're given an opportunity. And here's the thing I think that some people miss out. It's not that you're going to succeed every time, but we're going to give you a chance to succeed in this country.
Yeah, right.
And so some people think that, you know, you snap your fingers and it's going to all come. No, I've known people who are these entrepreneurs and innovators. What do? They work all night long. They sleep on a sofa or a cot in their little manufacturing facility, and they keep doing that. And pretty soon, you know, that hard work paid off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, equality of opportunity, not of the outcome. And if you work hard, I mean, most people agree in this economy. I know everybody's weird about the economy, but it seems to me like if you want it right now, there's jobs out there for people.
Well, you know, every place I go, the one thing I hear, and you know, we have a, you know, you look at the unemployment rate in this county, how low it is, and across my district, in Ohio has about a 3.7% unemployment rate. They used to always say that if you're at 5% unemployment, you're fully employed. So, but we have got to get more people out there working because we have so many companies. I walk in and I'll say, and before we get going with the conversation, I'll say, besides that you can't find employees and you got supply chain issues, what other issues do you have? And they go, well, that's it.
Yeah.
So, but you know, and they're willing to take a chance to take somebody and teach them, send them to, you know, like a 2-year school or someplace for 6 months to learn the whatever they have to do. Just and say, you know what, I'll take the chance. But they might go down the street for 50 cents more an hour. But they'll take that chance to try to get somebody in because again, we have such great opportunity and we have so many different things because again, I see this in my, all over my district. And again, I always say, how did you ever come up with this? I mean, I never,
people are ingenious, man.
Folks make stained glass in the district. Yeah. I was like, I couldn't believe it. How do you do that? They didn't have the background, but they did it.
Yeah.
So it's like wow.
YouTube. You start getting into something and the hobbies are out there and you can turn your hobby into a job these days. What's your greatest, as far as you think, you've been in 16 years,
since 07. Yeah.
So this will be your 17th year. What do you see so far as like your biggest accomplishment in DC? I know it's hard. You're one of 435, but
you know, being given, you know, taking up a task and getting it accomplished. I've been fortunate because of my committee assignment that I've been able to work on a lot of pieces of legislation from energy to healthcare to telecommunications, you know, commerce. You can go down the line in environment. But just to give you an example, we had a situation. The piece of legislation had been drifting around for 10 years. And the member wasn't going to be there in the next Congress. And they said, Latta, it's yours. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do this for the next 10 years. We're going to get this done. And it was called Track and Trace. And what this piece of legislation was all about was from the manufacturer of a drug and making sure that there was no adulteration or counterfeiting all the way down the line until you got to the corner drugstore. And you have to know exactly where that was. And I remember one of the things that I always did when in the state legislature, I always, you know, you had to work pieces. I mean, you just didn't snap your fingers and something happened. And so I remember the best thing I've ever done for my office, I've got 8 folding chairs so I can get 16 people in my office at one time. And I remember at that initial meeting, I had the pros, the cons, and the interested parties in this thing. And I told everybody, I said, listen, we got to get this thing done. I want everybody to listen to each other today because if you got problems, but I said, you know what? I'm a firm believer in what Ronald Reagan said. Ronald Reagan said, first, if you're with me 85% of the time, you're my friend. And he'd rather get 80% of something than go off the cliff with all flags flying. And so, you know, we worked it, and I can still remember about a year after that piece of legislation became law, that I had somebody in Washington sit down at a table I was at and said, "Can I ask you a question?" He said, "How did you get that bill passed? Because we couldn't figure it out, and it's working it." And unfortunately, sometimes you run into some snags. I've been working on autonomous vehicle legislation for three Congresses now. We had it passed out of the House. We had 300 staff meetings on that alone. I can't tell you how meetings in D.C. and across the country I did on it. But my view is that we have to get that thing done.
What's the legislation?
It's autonomous vehicle.
Okay.
And so what will happen is that because right now communist China is now testing their vehicles in California. So there are three of the seven testing going on right now are them. And, you know, do you want their technology or do you want U.S. technology? And I'm saying we want U.S. technology.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to get it there. Because it's important.
What do you see as the timeline on that? Like, when can we expect autonomous vehicles?
For a lot of people, they think that, this is going to happen in a very short period of time. Because, if you watch, I was watching a couple of the football games over the weekend, and I can't remember which U.S.
Yeah, BMW has one now.
One of the pickup trucks.
Okay,
I can't remember the guys. He's driving along and takes his hands off. But, we're people don't realize, but we're already at a level two and moving that up to a level five. A level five is truly when you get into a vehicle, and it's like sitting on a sofa with facing each other, and the vehicle takes you where it wants to go. But for overall, it's going to take a good number of years to get us to that point. But the big part of it is right now this technology is being built in cars today. So if people think about lane assist, or brake assist,
right?
That's autonomous vehicle operation already. So it's being built in, and so people they want that because again, we had over 43,000 people die in traffic accidents last year, and when you look at over 93% to 94% of all the accidents that occur are driver error. It's driver error. And so I had to renew my driver's license about a week ago, and they handed me a sheet of paper showing how the laws have changed here in Ohio, saying that distracted driving, and your distracted driving is from what? Your cell phone.
Oh yeah.
And so this is the big problem we have, and but we can save a lot of lives. And also on the insurance side, from collisions for people, because again, a lot of it's because they're not paying attention, and you, get hit in the rear end by somebody coming up on you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to be in DC. I go to DC with our eighth graders. We're always struggling to find like places to eat. What's your go-to? What is your go-to?
Yeah, you see, haunt. That's the other thing. People think we're eating all the time in D.C.
Usually, yeah, I bet you get a lot of stuff just brought in. And
the first day back, when I fly in, I usually always pack a cheese sandwich or peanut butter and jelly. And then I always take enough apples and oranges for the week. I've got a whole bunch of granola bars on my desk because a lot of days I don't get to eat lunch.
Yep.
You might roll into dinner you're not eating. There's a Chinese restaurant down the street, and it's no DC prices. It's pretty much what you'd probably find on Main Street here.
Yep.
And upper. So, but that's because it's only about a 4-block walk down. A friend of mine and I can run down there and walk back and get back to work then at night, not during the day, at night.
It's all work, all work and no play.
No half smokes from Ben's Chili Bowl.
No, I did take a couple of several cans of canned venison. I had canned up in Hancock County, and my friend and I, we did eat a can of venison one night when it was too late to go anyplace else. I said, I got a can of venison. He said, I got some potatoes, canned potatoes. And I said, wait, I think I got a can of corn too. So that's what we had for dinner.
Glamorous. The glamorous life of a U.S. congressman. Yes. That's fantastic. And anything like, you're on these committees, and I'm sure that it's work, right? I mean, everybody knows you're working. I think you told the kids earlier, 7 to 7 is a pretty typical day.
Short day.
A short day. Yeah. What do you do during the day to decompress?
Well, you know, one of the great things about my job, it changes every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because if I have multiple meetings in my office, I could have a person coming in to talk about telecom issue, somebody else coming in to talk about energy issue, somebody else coming in to talk about education issue, and you name the issue out there. And so that's all day, you know. So it's just your day constantly changes. And then, you can be in committee for a couple hours. And you have the witnesses first. You might have 3, 4, 5 witnesses. Get through the witnesses. Then you start questions. We only get 5 minutes to ask questions, so you really want to make sure your questions are good, on point, and concise. But then during committee, they could call votes. Then say, well, I had to do the other day. I said that if we don't get done before, we're going to have to just recess and come back in 10 minutes after the last vote's called. Mm-hmm. But there's a decompression time down there.
Gotcha.
But for me, at 5 o'clock in the morning is when I work out.
Okay.
I get my hour and 10, 15 minute workout.
You get a little treadmill run, or you lift free weights. What do you do?
I work out on a recumbent bike, because by doing that, I can read a book at the same time.
Nice. Yeah.
So I get through a lot of books that way.
I would imagine also you do a lot of reading.
You have to.
Or you do a lot of reading. Yeah.
You know, like I mentioned to the students, what I try to do is when I get up at 4:15 in the morning, that's when I get up. One of the things I want to make sure is I go through at least 8 newspapers online. And so that gives me my start for the day for what I know that's out there. Plus, in D.C., if they're hard copies, I'll rip out sheets. And by the time the staff gets in, I've already written stuff on newspapers and say, did you see this? You want to read this? This pertains to the committee. This is something we're working on.
Yep.
So, by 8 o'clock when they come in, they've got it. Because normally what happens, it always happens. At night, we have a very big 3-ring notebook. So the staff in Washington each has a pocket. Part in it, so everybody can put, they want me to read it, see it, sign it, etc. And then so I review every letter that goes out of DC, so there's another binder for that. If the Ohio staff, they send letters to DC that I can sign, because I sign every constituent letter that goes out. And so a lot of nights at 10 o'clock, one night I finish up at 5 after 12, but that binder has to be back out there, so when they walk in the morning, they can start working. Oh. They pick it right back up.
Yeah. So you guys are busy. All right. Well, hey, I don't want to take up any more of your time. We're about out. So
I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much.
Let me tell you,
thank you all for what you do. Because again, I look back on as I mentioned to the students, you know, I hate to admit it. It was about fourth grade when I finally figured out why I was going to school.
Well, that's pretty good. And, it took me about ninth grade.
Until my parents had to change the sidewalk. I think there was a scratch mark still going down it from them pulling me out every day to have to go to school. But I had some really good teachers in elementary school, and then, of course, in junior and senior high that were just excellent. And they got me, you know, point in the right direction.
It's
just
like folks gotta
work.
Yep. Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on,
Bob. Thanks
very
much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, there it was, my interview with Bob Latta. Special thanks to Aaron Frazee there for helping me out. Shout out to Coomer, who was unable to be there for this one. And a big thanks to Bob Latta for helping us out, getting this thing set up. Also, he gave me a bunch of pocket constitutions for my government class. He came in, talked to my government class that day for a solid hour. I mean, we had to cut it short just because the day was coming to the end. And then he agreed to stay around and sit in the library and do a podcast with me, which was super cool, just to get to pick his brain a little bit. For those of you that were thinking, ask him about abortion, ask him about gun control, like that wasn't ever what this was going to be. And so I hope you feel like I kept it off of politics. This is not a political podcast, and I definitely want to keep it that way. But it is a podcast about real people, real stories, and I thought Bob had a great one. He's just a cool, you know, just a good dude to me. Seems like a good stand-up fellow, and he shot me some straight answers, and it was great. So, again, thank you, Bob, for coming on. I hope everyone enjoyed it. Maybe learn something. So again, this is Real Stories Podcast with Graham Treadway and Brian Coomer out of Upper Sandusky, Ohio, telling real stories from our hometown and the surrounding area, just anything we can get our hands on, talking to people, telling stories. If you haven't already, make sure you hit the subscribe button. You'll get updates every month or so when we put one out, and you'll help us become more searchable and easier to find. We'll also, you know, we're available all the places where you look for stuff. So find us, like us, and keep listening. Again, keep it real.